The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry with Joe McGill.
Good morning, how are you this morning? I'm Joe McGill and you're listening to the Saturday Supplement, and I hope I find you well wherever you are listening to us around the world on RadioKerry.ie or on 96 to 98 FM on the traditional wireless. It's March and people are saying now spring has sprung, but of course February is the start of spring, but doesn't it really feel like spring now? The stretch in the evenings, the stretch in the mornings, it's absolutely wonderful to see. Later on, we'll be talking about, we have a very special kind of topic we'll be talking about, because Wednesday is International Women's Day, and we're going to be talking about very special women that have been involved in drama in this county down through the years. And I've picked out a few that Fiona Brennan has highlighted on this programme on the last over the last few years, so we'll be hearing about them in the next hour. But it is the first Saturday of the month, and that can only mean one thing: it is time for our In Focus photography slot with Dominic Walsh. And Dominic, what's rare is wonderful. You are in the studio with us. How are you?
I'm delighted to be here, Joe. I'm absolutely privileged to be in the studio. It's lovely. And I'm looking across from Joe this morning with his lovely smile and a glint in his eye. I'm telling you, he's full of beans in the morning. I don't know how you do, Joe, get up this early in the morning and be up here and so full of yourself and doing well. And
so full of myself.
Full of yourself. You've all these jokes. You should hear him, listeners. He has me laughing since I came into the studio this morning. And that. But Joe, you're right. As you were saying there, it's a great time of the year. There's a stretch in the evenings. The weather is actually good. And you know, you can get out and about. You see people walking. And now you can see all the trees are starting to blossom, the flowers are starting to come out, the daffodils there. So this is a great time of the year. It's a new start to everything. I know spring was there, but they were starting to come out. But whereas now everything's there, and this is my favourite month, this is St. Patrick's Day month, so you're bound to get good pictures. You don't even have to look for pictures this month. They'll just come to you.
Excellent. And our theme for this month is Spring is in the Air, and we'll be talking about that very shortly. But as always, Dominic brings in his own photos with him, and what he has brought in for us first. This is an absolutely wonderful photo. I describe it as a silhouette, but Dominic might fill us in further. Tralee Art Group celebrated over 40 years in existence with an exhibition of work, and it was opened to the public at Tuamsa Tíre Gallery. The exhibition, which opened recently, comprises a wonderful collection of works by members to celebrate and capture their personal responses to the last 40 years of the Tralee Art Group while providing inspiration for the future. And pictured on the night were Tralee Art Group members Paddy Lynch and Phil Daly arrive for the opening. This is a kind of a very creative, thinking outside the box kind of photo, Dominic.
It is actually. It's an unusual picture, and just let people know, it's a kind of a picture where I didn't use flash or anything like that. I used available light, and I was just sitting waiting for it all to happen. And when I sit and I'm waiting for something to happen, I'll always have my camera by my side. And these two people arrived into the Tíomsa, and they were just chatting, and I spotted a shot and I said, this is the picture. So what I did was I positioned my chair, because I had to take it at a very slow shutter speed. I'm using a 70 to 200 millimeter lens. That's a long lens to be using. I shot it at 1/80th of a second, which on a long lens is a very slow speed to try and hold it still. So what I did was I sat on a chair and I turned the chair back to front. In other words, the back of the chair, I was leaning my two elbows on that, and that was holding my lens still. So when I took the picture at that slow shutter speed, everything was quite still and there was no movement in it. I used 1000 ASA, that's the amount of light that gets in to the lens, and I didn't use flash, I used focus lock, which I use quite a lot. What that means is I focus in on my subject and I lock it. I just literally just press a button and lock it in. It was a picture that I was sent to, the Kerryman newspaper sent me to get to cover the art exhibition. And when I went in, and I just wanted something a little bit different, because there's a lot of paintings inside there, and anytime I go to art exhibitions, I always end up photographing the fabulous work. But it's just, when I took this shot, I took it, and there's a painting at the right hand side of the lady, which is absolutely perfect. So I did actually, let's say, adhere to the brief and do a picture of a painting, but I've picture of two people who were completely silhouetted on that, and it just it kind of works as a picture. And what it does is it gets you to look at it twice. and you have to make out what it is, where it is. Are they outside looking in, or are they inside in a building and they're looking into a room like that? It's in the wrong gallery inside in Sheemsa, which is a magnificent place to photograph.
Yeah, it's a very arty photo. You kind of went to, you kind of really got into the theme of it being there.
Do you know something? Like when I go out some evenings and I kind of arrive early for an event. If an event is happening at 7, you'll see me there about 7:20. I tend to arrive in and do my little bit of recce and sit down. And I was just sitting down relaxing. I had not planned to take this picture at all. It just happened. They came in and they were talking. I didn't position them and I took the photograph. And again, when I'd taken the photograph, I went up and asked them, was it okay to use the picture? And I asked them for their names and they were only delighted. And it just, it kind of emphasizes that out of something so simple, and you're just sitting and watching, if you're kind of aware of your surroundings and take notice of what's happening, then you could always come up with a good picture. Anytime I go to a match, a football match or an event like that, you know, my camera's always close by and I might be talking to somebody, but my head is always swaying or my eyes are swaying. I'm always looking around to try and capture something, because it's those in-app shots that just appear all in no place. They're the ones that tend to make pictures most of the time.
Can anyone take a silhouette photo, or do you have to be a professional like you? Because you mentioned a lot of things there. It sounded like it was very technical to me. Like, you know, is there kind of principles that you can just do it to take it, or do you need to know what you're doing?
You need to have an idea.
Yeah.
The best way to take, well, the easiest way to take a silhouette is to go out and the sun is setting and stand somebody in front of it, because you've got a very bright light behind them and it blackens them straight away on that. This is the same principle.
Yeah.
You know, that I'm doing here, that the bright light hitting the wall at the, let's say, at the back of me or of them, and that is reflecting a bright light and they're standing there. They're actually out. They're kind of in light, out of light on that. So if you kind of speed up the shutter speed a little bit on that, it tends to silhouette them. But if the background that's in this is brighter than them, it's going to darken down. You can do it with a mobile phone.
Yeah.
You can do it with a camera. But ideally, if you're doing this type of work, you want to be moving from automatic or shutter priority or fully automatic and just going to manual. And if you've got a camera that can go manual, I think people should be moving to that. If they wish, if we get enough inquiries about it, we'll actually devote a show later this stage about moving from automatic to manual, just to tell you the transition.
Yeah.
It's quite an easy transition to do, but it can be done very simply. If you're using a mobile phone, what you do is you've got a little cursor on your phone. You can go down, you can check the light. Move that cursor to the brightest light.
Okay.
That would be the back wall there where it's very bright. Move it there and everything else will tend to go darker.
So focus on the brightest part.
Focus on the brightest part.
So you can just click with your finger. Yeah,
you can move it and click on that.
Yeah.
And that'll really, let's say, overexpose that wall.
Yeah.
So if you overexpose that wall, for example, the painting is still there because, and that would be in focus, and everything else that's underexposed on it should be quite dark.
And do you brighten, you know, the way you can touch on a spot and you can pull up the cursor to make it brighter?
You can do that as well. You should be able to see what you're doing.
Exactly, yeah, so you can see it.
And so what you're actually doing there, that's manual.
Yeah.
Like you're using an automatic to get it, but you're actually going into manual mode. So it's good for people to use that.
Yeah, it's very, very, very good. The people there, did they know you were taking the photo?
They did not know I was taking that photograph, no. I went up to them after I'd taken it and they were very polite and thanked me for taking the picture. But it's just nice. You can see the gentleman there. He's got a peak cap on him. He's just after coming in from the cold outside. The lady's got her jacket. They've just arrived on that. The two of them are standing there. And the thing is, I really had to kind of position it because I wanted a picture in it, but I also wanted that man to have a little bit of light between him and the wall on his left hand side. That's his back. So I wanted him to stand out. Whereas if I put him over another small bit into that dark area, he would just disappear into it.
Very good. I thought this next photo was a selfie, but it's not. A loggerhead turtle who was cold, stunned, dehydrated, very lethargic and couldn't swim or move was rescued by Cormac de Rochta and family in Mayo on the 12th of February 2023, washed up on the beach. The girl turtle, named Crogeen, was transferred to Dingle Aquarium and came under the medical supervision of Dingle Aquarium staff Dr. Kevin Flannery and Maria Foley. She's doing very well. And that was a joke at Dominic about the selfie, but I don't think he picked up on it.
I thought actually when I went out that day, when I looked at the turtle list, they were talking about a name. I says, if it's a fella, they call Joe. Because I see that smile and that glint in the eye, you know, that has to be Joe. What this was, I was just again, I got a call from Dr. Kevin Flannery of Dingle Ocean World there and that. And incidentally, they're very good to me. Anytime I go out and ask them to do something, they bend over backwards. They keep me very happy. It's a magnificent facility out there like that. And there's loads of fish and stuff out there as well. So it's a great place to go. I love going out there on that. So he brought me out for after turtle. And the turtle actually was in... They have a kind of, let's say, a quarantined area. So that turtle will not be seen by members of the public. It's going to be brought back to health and then it's going to be released. It's not going to be put into the main aquarium at all. So it's amazing. I was delighted to get into a place where I normally don't get into. And they're just nursing this turtle back to health. He's eating. I think he put on, 100 grams, I think, by the time they've had him like that, you know. And they take care of him. And they take care of him meticulously. They had the weight, the length, the height, the length, the breadth. They had everything, all the measurements you could take from this turtle, they had it on that. And they go in every couple of hours, they check it, it's inside in this little tub on that. And incidentally, when they come out of the turtles and they get them, they have cold water shock.
Oh yeah.
And it takes them a long, long time. It could take a couple of days to bring the temperature back up to normal. Just to let people know how I took it on available light. When you're photographing animals like this, and especially wild animals like this, I'm of the belief that don't be sticking a flash into their face, firing a flash or anything like that, because it's a nine for a person if the flash is too close, because I used a very wide angle lens. So I got up very close and I just wanted the turtle's head very sharp in the photograph. So the lens was used, it was a 14 to 24 lens. I shot it at 1/60th of a second and I used the available lights that were there. Now, anybody that's into photography would know I shot it on what's called RAW. RAW is, it just captures an image and I go in afterwards and I can reset the lighting, the colour, temperature. I think we spoke about that.
Yeah.
On that, it's just the temperature is measured in values. It can go from green, blues and reds and it can go very orange and I just settled on the colour afterwards like that and we worked on it. But the turtle looks as if he's actually laughing, do you know, smiling into the camera. It's absolutely lovely.
Yeah, it's gas, yeah, because I'm zooming right in at there and it's the wonderful thing about Dominic's photos, the quality of them. You can actually go right in, it keeps the clarity. But it looks like he's smiling. His eyes are very unusual in that, like, it's like they're like caps over the eyes or something. It's weird to describe. He looks more like a bee to me than a, you know, a turtle. Very
actually,
unusual.
You're actually right. I think it's a loggerhead turtle. I couldn't be too sure of what type of turtle it is on that. But you're right. When I looked at that day as well, and I think I might even pass the comment to Kevin Flannery out there and the lady with him, I thought it had a head like a bee. And it does. It's absolutely the colours.
Yeah, the colours as well. Yeah. And his cute button nose as well. Wonderful photos. You have another photo, but we're going to go to a break first and we're going to come back and look at that after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee. You're listening to The Saturday Supplement with Joe McGill on Radio Kerry.
You're listening to the Saturday Supplement. It's the first Saturday of the month. Dominic Walsh is in studio with us for our monthly photography slot in focus with renowned photographer Dominic Walsh. The Ukrainian community gathers in Tralee to mark their first anniversary of Russian invasion. And the vigil was held in solidarity with people from Ukraine representatives and said they wanted to extend the opportunity to local people who may feel powerless to come together in solidarity over the war. Dominic, again, you would have taken a lot of photos, I'd imagine, you know, in the last year to do with, I suppose, the Ukrainian conflict. But here we've two wonderful kids. The hopes of the future are in their eyes, and it's beautifully, I suppose, in soft focus on the front is all these kind of candles and the flowers. They look like sunflowers to me, which is kind of the flower of Ukraine, isn't it?
It is, yes, yeah. It is a lovely flower, actually, sunflower. What it is, Joe, is we went down to, this is actually, incidentally, this photograph was used from page of the Kerryman this week on that. We went down to do a shoot, and a reporter was down there as well. And as I was there, I spotted two kids, you know, and the one thing I find that, again, and I'm an avid kind of, how can I profess the fact that please don't go too close to people, especially if people are mourning or in grief or anything like that, or if they're quite emotional, like, you know, the best way to get these pictures is to stay as far away as you can and possible and just get in their eye line. What I mean by the eye line is, get down low enough and they're looking out and you're almost looking at, into their eyes. And that's a good level to work on. When I was learning photography, I was always told that I had a camera, and it was a waist level camera I used to use. And that waist level camera used to always, if the person was sitting, it would go to their eye level. If they were standing, you would have to raise that to their eye level. You see a lot of my pictures that I take, I tend to use eye level shots because it's the rule of, now again, rules are meant to be broken. So there was two kids there. I stayed quite a distance away, down nice and low, and looked at them. And you know something, as I was looking through it, they were looking at me. The young lady is there, she's on the left, and she's looking out, and there's a little bit of a smile, like she's kind of there watching what's happening, and probably not aware of what's happening. But it's the young man on the right, like he's got a stare, you know, like he's looking out, and like that, you know, and they're probably listening to this women back at their homes where they live, about the war, about their friends, about their homes, about their places, and like what's happening, and not knowing what the future is. So this shot kind of works in a way that is, I've gone down very low. I've actually sat on the town square in Tralee. I sat down on the ground, crossed my legs, again holding the camera on my knee and bracing my body, because I'm shooting at a very slow shutter speed, even slower, 60th of a second, and I'm shooting in. And the fact that it was quite late in the evening brings up the candles. As I say to people, if you want to do shots where you want to bring up light and candles and lights like that, you know, as I say, if you're walking past the shop window and you can see into the shop and you can see the colours in the back of the shop inside, that's a good time of the evening. We call it the golden hour on that. Mm-hmm. And that's when I've taken this shot. The shot was taken at a speed of 1/60 of a second. The lens I used was 70 to 200. I had the lens maxed out at 200 millimetres. In other words, I was very, very far away from them. My f-stop was 5.6, ISO 1000, and again, I use it a lot, photo lock. In other words, I lock into the eyes and I just lock it. Just to tell you how I do that, what I do is I press the shutter and I just hold it. It's like a lot of people compare to a rifle of a gun. It's a two action. So the first action, it starts to focus. Then the second action, it locks. Then the third action then is when you've take the picture. So I always hold it in the second action and I don't release my finger, and no matter what I do with that camera, it'll hold that particular focus for me. So that's what I mean by focus lock when I use it. And the picture just is very low. The candles are there, the flowers are there, the sunflowers are there, the colours of the flags, Ukrainian flags there, the blue and the yellow are there, and the kids are looking. You've got their mom's between them at the back. She's holding a candle herself as well. But I just made this about the two young people, and it just... actions speak louder than words. You can see it.
Yeah. Just to say as well, I know my mobile phone, like I have an iPhone, and the AFP, I think it's called, lock. You can lock it as well once you get your photo focus. So yeah, it's a handy little feature. That photo, Dominic, is, I think it's absolutely amazing, because like you said, you have the two kids. One has the smile and kind of hope, and the other, it's almost more solemn and maybe a bit fearful, you'd say, the look. So it just shows the whole sides of this as well, in the line of the conflict that's happening. But, you know, the welcome that them kids have probably got here then on top of that. So it's a very poignant one, yeah.
Like when I finished, I went up and showed them the picture and they were delighted, they were happy, and I sat down with them and we showed them the, they couldn't speak English on that. But, you know, I think you can tell that young lady's comfortable where she is. She's comfortable in Ireland. She's there on that. The young man, you can just tell. You can tell that by the eyes. I think you can tell it. Like, the eyes really are the path into the soul, really, aren't they, like that?
Yeah,
you know?
Completely. Now, let's get to your photos at home that you've sent in to us. And you send them to jmcgill@radiokerry.ie and send them before midday, the Wednesday before the first Saturday of the month. And also three photos max, no more than three photos, and we really appreciate all those that send in these wonderful photos. All these photos are on radiokerry.ie, and if you click on the podcast section, go into In Focus with Dominic Walsh, and there you will see the photos. And of course, the theme was Spring is in the Air. It's that time of the year for spring cleaning, as local man Willie Guiney was busy while able to give a smile at Market Street, the stall, and the photo is by Moss Joe Brown, and there he is out cleaning the windows and a big smile on his face, Dominic. That spring cleaning, that's really fitting the theme.
Oh, it is, yeah. It's a great picture. I know Willie as well. And if anybody knows Willie from the store later, he's always smiling. No matter when you see him, he's always smiling. He's a lovely gentleman like that, you know. And Moss Brown, it's good to see him back into the town, into the streets again, as opposed to the landscapes and things like that, you know. And it's good on that. The only Moss is that I'd be very fearful of, just, again, watch those lines at the back there, you know, and that, just straighten your lines. But it's a good picture and it really works. And Willie's very happy in it.
Now, Aita Hannan, our current photo of the year champion. First picture from taken from Bale Strand. Second picture was definitely a spring feeling. Mr. Sparrow gathering food. Third photo, my dog Monty out in the garden with me. He's sticking out his tongue, showing me how much he likes gardening. And a goldfinch and a cherry blossom in my garden. Thanks for looking at my pictures from Aita Hannan. And all these are just one is better than the next, Dominic.
Oh, it's great. It's great to see it there like that, John. It's great to see Bale and there's a fisherman out there and fishing away there, and he's got his two rods up and you have a nice sky behind. There's actually lovely skies this time of year. Like, I don't know if you've seen them around yourself, Joe, but there's absolutely fabulous skies there. And what they do is they make it very easy for people to get nice pictures.
Yeah.
So make use of these colours when you see them, because it's not often that they're around on that. Like the bird feeding and the insect in the mouth, that's a lovely picture. I've never got a picture like that. It's absolutely lovely. And you go down in the dog, you can see the dog inside and the plants there and the greenery around the dog. It's a lovely picture as well on that. The next picture is actually unique. I love it. That, I think it's a goldfinch that's inside in the cherry blossoms,
yes.
I think, is it?
Yes,
that?
Yeah.
That is an amazing picture to get. It really says spring, because then you've got the birds are going to getting ready to nest and they're ongoing, and you've got the flowers of the cherry blossom just coming out. That's a great picture. Absolutely love it. The crop is brilliant. It's a square crop, which we don't normally talk about. In other words, all the sides are of equal length and the borders right in the middle, and you've got a lovely composition around it. Technically, it's a very good photograph.
Yeah, and it's like the blossoms frame your photo. It's brilliant. Good morning, Joe and Dominic. I kept an eye on the weather, hoping to catch the first puff of spring air to match my favourite photo competition on Radio Kerry. I was complaining about the flu and damp, dull weather when suddenly I was greeted by my cat, Ginny. Her slow, sweet meow seemed to say, "What about me?" Thanks for brilliant radio listening. And that comes in from Agnes O'Sullivan.
But see, the thing is, like, cats are always springing around like that. They're always full of life. You know,
are you a cat person or a dog person?
I'm a doggy person. We have a dog, Sweepy.
Yeah.
Sweepy's been on the radio a couple of times, do you know?
She has. She's got a voice in her, yeah.
She's got a voice. No, we have a resident cat that comes to visit, and we're feeding the cat. We've named the cat Ginger. We don't know where the cat comes from, and we don't know how long the cat stays with us, but he comes down every swat for something to eat, and we all pat him, and he comes in around the house, and he goes way off to his next stop or haunt, wherever he goes. So, yeah, I'm not a cat person per se, but this is a good picture. And, you know, these are the type of pictures, again, that, like, you see on postcards or cards like that, or get well soon, or happy to see you go or come or whatever like that. So it's a nice picture.
Very good. Hello, Joe. Just a photo that our daughter Nora took of the cows jumping around after going out for the second spell this year. The red cow is called Sweetheart. Regards, John Patrick O'Carroll. And also John Patrick sent in photos that our son took of Martha after calving, and Martha is the cow, obviously, and there you are. That's as fresh as you'll get a cow calving, because the calf is just after being born. He hasn't even stood up yet.
Isn't it lovely that when you can bring in a young person and get them to capture something that is so unique like this, and it's the beginning of life, and it's lovely to see. And thanks very much for giving that young person the time and the patience to bring them in, because it's very important. They're our future. They're our future photographers, and they're going to capture the world on that. Just one question about the first picture of the cow. Is the cow jumping around or bouncing, or... He seems very active, doesn't he?
The bouncing cow, you called it, yeah.
Bouncing cow. So there are two lovely pictures, do you know?
Yeah, jeepers, yeah. He's really going up into the air. She is, I should say. She's really going up into the air. She's a different colour as well than the rest of them. And maybe she likes to stand out. And maybe she, you know, I could see a whole movie about that cow wanting to go on and, you know, better herself than the herd. Yeah, go out there, be a performer maybe. And she's there, stuck with the herd. Yeah. Do you ever watch Nelly the Elephant?
No, but I heard it's a nice cow.
Nelly the Elephant. But Nelly the Elephant is an elephant. I suppose a female elephant's a cow. We will return to more of these photos, but while we compose ourselves here, we'll go to a break and we'll have more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
Deirdre here from Mobility Genie 4 Park Fan 4. With over 20,000 customers nationwide for post-op recovery or independent living solutions, we are here for you. Visit our large showroom or call 066 712 0088 or go to mobilitygenie.ie. We have recently launched our very exciting Centre for Smart Ageing, so be clever and check out our inclusive health and wellness classes. Visit smart-aging.ie. Remember, movement is medicine.
McKenna's of Listowel have everything you need this spring. From garden, paint, electrical and all your household needs. Call in today or visit McKenna's.ie. For the best quality and service since 1871, make it McKenna's, your local top line and expert store.
We all love Irish music and the artists that make it. We're taking part in Irish Music Month to promote the amazing work of Irish artists of every genre. Across the country, we're putting Irish music first. We're playing more Irish music than ever before on independent radio stations across the country. We're committed to promoting Irish music. Are you? Proudly supported by IBI, Hot Press and the BAI Sound and Vision Fund.
Weekends are for...
meeting up with friends?
No. Weekends are for...
mowing the lawn!
No. Weekends are for...
going out?
No. Weekends are for sports. So join us every Saturday and Sunday when we bring you all the live, up-to-date coverage of the local, national and international sporting events. Why would you spend your weekend doing anything else? So tune in to Weekend Sports on Radio Kerry every Saturday and Sunday from 2 to 6.
You're listening to the Saturday Supplement with Joe McGill on Radio Kerry.
Now, it is the first Saturday month. Dominic Walsh is here for our monthly In Focus photography slot. And we're looking at the photos that you sent in to us and you emailed them to jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. Hi, Joe and Dominic. We heard spring is in the air. And that comes in from Nora Nelligan. And we have a photo here of a few ducks. Ducks or geese? They're ducks. They're ducks. They're ducks, aren't they, Dominic?
I thought they're geese. They've got two legs and feathers anyway, so we'll take it from there.
Do you know what? They're actually geese. They're geese, I think.
They're geese.
Yeah. I'm not 100%, but I'm 90%.
That's a good geese.
Yeah. Good geese. Oh, great, great. Yeah, so anyway, back to the photo. Lovely image there, Dominic, isn't it?
It's lovely, actually. It's great. Like, the one thing, Nora, what I might have done is, I know that ducks and geese and animals, like, you tend to have to shoot when they're just there like that, you know. If you just went to the left a small bit, what I'm saying, listeners, is the photograph looks very busy. There's an awful lot happening in the background, which actually the foreground should be the three birds themselves. That. So if you went a bit to the left and got more of that white wall in and a bit of the stone wall, it'd be a lovely picture. And don't ever be afraid to get down nice and low. If you're holding the camera or anything like that, go down nice and low. It's a lovely picture, do you know, on that. And they're just waddling away off into wherever they're going.
Do you know what I love about that photo? It could be taken 70 or 80 years ago because it has lovely whitewashed walls around it and the green grass. There's nothing to say what year that
is absolutely. That's what I'm saying. If you went, it looks a little bit busy, but if you went around, it is. It's one of those pictures that you see up on the wall, like if you go into a restaurant or anything like that. So it's a real traditional photograph, isn't it?
And we often talk about perspectives here. If you got down the height of the bird in question, would that be, you know, would you get a nicer image that way?
It would actually make them taller and bigger.
Yeah.
Do you know, like when I shoot sports a lot of time, I would try and get below the sports action because it makes them bigger and towering and it pushes them into the photograph a little bit more. But then with animals and that, you kind of have to work with what you have, you know?
Yeah, okay. Hi, John Dominic. With regard to your theme, spring is in the air, I would normally associate spring with young lambs, daffodils, new growth, new life and optimism after a long winter. I've attached three photos of which were taken on a beautiful sunny day last Monday. One shows new lambs enjoying the warm sunshine on their first day of life. Another shows a clump of daffodils set against a clear blue sky. Last photo shows a small bunch of primroses that have arrived early in springtime. Wishing you both the very best at this wonderful time of year. And that comes in from Michael Kennedy, Waterside Inch. Michael, we wish you all the best as well. And nothing says spring is in the air than lambs and daffodils.
And it's lovely. There's two lambs there. Like, one is lying down and the other one's facing into me, like as if they're almost like inseparable, really. Like, it's a lovely picture. And again, you can see how Michael's got down nice and low and he's shooting in, and the difference it actually makes to the photograph. You've got that grass around it and you've got that lovely light rays from the sun coming in, and it's causing different lights and different shadows and grains, and it's like, that's a lovely picture. And the daffodils and the flowers, they're two lovely pictures. And again, they're they kind of come across, you look at them, and when you look at a photograph and you look back at a photograph, you go away from it and you look back at it, and it leaves an imprint in your head. I think that's a great picture, and that's what these pictures do. It's a nice selection of pictures.
Hello, Joe and Dominic. For my March photos, I chose some flowers from my garden. For me, the snowdrops announced that spring has arrived, and I love the colour of the blue vinca that appear here, and they're under the hedges. Mila Boykus, Margaret O'Shea, and again, wonderful, actually very, very professional and clear photos of the flowers in question.
I think Margaret has actually slowed down the whole process, and she's taken her time in what she's doing. She's looking at what she's doing, and you can tell the composition is very good on that. I wouldn't change anything in the two photos. I just think they're actually very good. They come across, the colours are very good. And you'll find a thing about snowdrops when you're photographing them like that, you know, and that if you can try and get a lighter background, it brings out the leaves and the shoots a little bit more. But it's what has worked on this is that they're white heads and they're shooting into a dark background, which brings them out really well, and they're really kind of spicy and bouncing out in the photograph. And you can see the other flowers, lovely little flowers well on that, you know.
Hi, Joe and Dominic. Spring is in the air with the cherry blossom coming into bloom along the Green River in Tarbert. And that comes in from Brendan Kissan. And there we have, they're kind of, these are shot in kind of portrait, I would say. And we have along the river, and we're more focused on the cherry blossom and then the beautiful background.
I think that there's two photographs there, and I would have to say I prefer one over the other. Like, they're quite nice, they're two lovely photos. Like, but if I'd have to say that one of them, it's the flower is the centre of the photograph, and you've got the green, you've got the water underneath it, and you've got the branch just coming off up, and it's just nice. The composition is lovely on that. The other one that he's taken is that the flowers are in it, the branches are in it, but the sky's in it, and the sky isn't a grey sky at all. It's kind of a grey sky, and it just goes to show one photograph has hidden that greyness and turned it into a lovely photograph and enhanced it, and whereas the other photograph hasn't enhanced it as much. So if I had to say one photograph over the other, I would have to prefer the one where the plant is, and the plant is going up almost out of frame. It's very nice.
Yeah, Brendan is a great photographer. He always sends us in excellent
lovely stuff.
Photos. So there are our photos. Now we have to choose our humorous photo of the month first. Dominic, what are you going for?
John Patrick O'Carroll and the Bouncing Cow has to be the humorous one. I liked it. It's different. You know, it's not often that you see it.
And we should say that it's not John Patrick who took the photo. It's his daughter, Nora.
His daughter, Nora.
And the cow, the red cow, is called Sweetheart, by the way.
Sweetheart.
And Sweetheart, like I said, is going to leave the herd and go off now and have wonderful adventures around the world. Wait and see.
You wake up and the cow will be standing outside your door looking in at you.
The Bouncing Cow. You heard that. Is that what you were saying earlier?
Yes. Yeah.
You love your puns. So well done to Nora O'Carroll there. And our photo of the month goes to Dominic.
Like, as I said, we get great photos in every month, and people, please send them in. You know, like we love getting pictures. We sit down, we talk about them, we go through them all, and we don't just pass over all the photos, and we talk about them, we work it out on that. It has to be the goldfinch picture. The goldfinch inside the tree.
Beautiful.
Just think the composition, the framing and everything like that. There's new
the
flowers
colours,
coming
yeah.
up, the colours. It's just, as a picture goes, I think it's a great picture. And again, it takes time. And what people should do is actually is go onto your website and look at these pictures and get ideas.
Yeah.
You know, because when we're coming up now for St. Patrick's Day, there's going to be loads of opportunities, and they need to just practice it a bit like that.
All these photos are on radiokerry.ie, and if you click on the podcast section, go into In Focus with Dominic Walsh, and there you will see the photos. But our photo of the month is Aita Hannan, and that is her wonderful photo. And you know, Dominic, I was just thinking there, you know the way you see patterns long ago where people had stitched patterns and different, like, hankies and,
yes.
you know,
I think
that would make a great one, wouldn't it?
It would actually, yeah. yeah. Colour absolutely be, fabulous, yeah.
The colour would be spectacular. And the theme for next month, Dominic?
Well, it's St. Patrick's month, and people should be out there, like, you know, and as I say, this is the one month where the pictures are going to come to you. You don't have to go look at them. So what we're going to do is capturing what is St. Patrick's Day.
Okay.
And that's what it is. Just go out, just stand around. Like, there's so much going on in every part of the county like that, you know, and go out, say hello to people, smile at people, and take loads of pictures.
So celebrating Patrick's Day.
Celebrating St. Patrick's Day.
Brilliant.
Yes.
Okay, that's our theme, celebrating St. Patrick's Day. Email them to jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. Now we're going to be looking at Dominic's archive photo after this break.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
Now, I hope you're enjoying the programme so far. Dominic Walsh is with us, and as always, Dominic brings in his archive photo, and I love this part where we go back in time, because Dominic has a wonderful archive collection, and this one that he has chosen for us, let me read the description here to you. Niamh Murphy from Cork, who pays 69.9 pence, not cents, pence per litre in Cork, pictured at the petrol pumps of Kelleher's Garage in Tralee in Kerry, where the price of petrol is only 49.9p a litre. So it was 69.9 per litre in Cork, but in Kerry and Kelleher's it was 49.9 pence a litre. Dominic, that was a huge reduction.
So when I was going through my archives and I was looking through and I was trying to pick out stuff and tinker like that, and I came across this was actually it. Amazing, huge story. This was national news that the cheapest petrol in Ireland was in Kerry. It was in Tralee, you know, on that. And like it was probably a bumper day for me because I was around to all the garage. I've gone to Kelleher's there. I've gone to Nolan's garage up in Rock Street, and I've gone over around the other place. And there's some garage had a sign up, you know, at the price they were. But it just shows when you're looking at the garages, no, there's no digital signs there at that time, you know, when you see it. It's actually their cardboard or their paper they put up there like that. But the people that were coming from such a long distance to go and get their price of fuel, like, think of it, like 49.9 pence a litre. My God, and what we go to, 2.30 or 2.50? There, as recently it's gone to a litre like that, you know. There was queues outside petrol stations. This young lady actually was working in Cork, and she was filling up in Tralee before she'd go to work in Cork, and she was saving herself, like, pence. You're talking pennies like that, you know, on that. And even, like, you'd get calls from Dublin newspapers and be saying, you're the cheapest fuel there, like that, you know. And they said, you're probably the furthest away from the terminal, you know, and you're still the cheapest down there. And I'd like to think at this day and age, like, we're probably the cheapest in the country like that, you know. Like, when you think of it, that how life has changed. When we were, let's say, like, there was a petrol war, a price war as such over cents, and, like, the cheapest would have been 65 pence. Like, that wouldn't have been less than, 80 pence, 80 cent now, I think, like that, you know, on that. And people were just stocking up. It just shows how life changes and how costs go up, and that I never even thought about it, and I looked at it, and when I looked at it, and I have a lot more pictures than this, I just pulled out these few pictures of that, you know.
Yeah.
And to see people queuing in cars, and even that time to see how old the cars looked, you know, they change so often like that. And like people, like, and you've seen the old money, the 50 pence, and like, is there 51 pence or something like that?
I was going to say, you can actually see the hexagon 50p with the seagull in it, wasn't it? Or wasn't it? It was kind of an albatross,
yeah. Yeah.
And then you've a twopence, it's a tuppence, it's there as well, it's gas. And it's capturing, like, it is capturing history. And just to let people know as well, the diesel was 44.9 pence per litre, so it's great value as well.
And you know something, what I noticed about it, which people...
What year is this, by the way?
I think it's 1988, 1989, that way, yeah. I think. It's a long time ago, like that, yeah. You know? And like, even when you look today, you'll always see the 0.9 on the digital ones, even today.
Yeah.
I even remember, like, you go up into Nolan's, probably one of the very few garages here in Tralee that would actually go, and there's a guy comes out and says, hello, would you like me to fill your car for you, like that, you know? It's a lovely place to go to, and the garages around. It's just still hot news today.
Yeah.
That has not changed from there. And I think always, even when I was young fella again like that, you know, the cost of fuel, when it was up, it really governs the world. And like, if oil goes up, everything else goes up. Energy, electricity, everything is all up because of oil like that. And we're here and we're looking at it and we're kind of saying, you know, like, 50, like, if you can imagine, if you get something at 50.9 cent, that's 51p, like, you know, it's how it works. And the thing is that people were willing, I don't know how people do it, like, some people were travelling, like, from Killarney, from South Kerry up to fill their car, like, so, like, it must have been quite economical still to do it, like,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it's gas, yeah. No, we got that's your archive photo, but you got a question in during the week in relation to framing.
I did, actually. Breedmore in South Kerry just rang me and left me a message on advice on framing. Now, framing is as broad as photography, and there's so many different types of frame. If I can give one bit of advice to people, if you're framing anything of limited value or very valuable, what you should always do is put a mount around your photograph. What that means is that your photograph is not flush with the glass. If your photograph is flush with the glass and you've got, whether it's in your living room or wherever you have in your house, if you've got temperature changes like that, the moisture builds up between the photograph and the glass and they actually stick. I get a lot of people coming to me and they say, look, we've got a frame here and we're trying to change the frame but the photo stuck to the glass. I always say, don't touch it. Don't do anything. Bring it in to me. We digitize it so we get something off it and then we'll try and do some work after. There's chemicals and there's ways of washing it off and getting it like that, you know, but it's a thing really that I wouldn't recommend doing. But if you're framing, put a mount around it, you know, and sometimes a mount is actually the space between the photograph and the edge of the frame. It's a little bit of cardboard that goes around. There's a little bevel on it as well on that. And that tends to enhance the photograph and gives a bit of shape. I, as a photographer, my mounts, that space around there, I tend to oversize it because it enhances my photographs. It's bespoke type of frame is what I tend to use. And I use that and it looks quite nice. There's so many different ways of framing it like that. There's so many different things. But like, if you want advice on how to frame things, every place you go has frames. Whether it's into a shop, whether it's into a bar, a restaurant, or a social event, they'll all have frames up around the wall. And go around and look at the frames and see how they've them framed. And because they nearly always have done them professionally, and they'll always have them done in a way that shows off the photos as its best on that.
Yeah, that's a great tip about the mount, because, like you say, you know, a house, depending on the time of day, the light is shining differently all day. And it can affect it.
And a good rule to do like that, if you're putting up photographs like that, you know, like if the sun shines in your window all the time and it's hitting one wall on that, I wouldn't advise put pictures up on that wall because the UV rays will fade it.
Yeah, and we've had that in our house here where you've photo that's and very meaningful photo.
It is, yeah.
And then it's being faded away, yeah.
And I get a lot of people coming to me and they say, like, what's a good size to put up on a wall? You know, and when I'm advising people is you're either going to have a desk mount photograph or a photo ends up on a wall. A desktop photograph, the biggest you go to that is maybe a 10x8. 8x6 or a 10x8 is the biggest I would put on a desktop, because if it falls over, they can tend to fall like that. The smallest size I tend to put up on a wall would be a 10x8 or a 10x12. In other words, you wouldn't put a watch up on a wall to see a clock. You'd put a clock up on the wall to see a clock. So if you are putting a picture up on the wall, make sure it's big enough that people can see it. Like, I see a lot of people and they go up and they walk, you know, very close to try and see who's in it and things like that. So make it big enough on the wall so people can stand at a distance. People want to be looking at pictures about 5 or 6 feet away and be able to see clearly for the work and the size.
Dominic, you're a mine of information. That is very helpful. And if you have questions for Dominic, like those photo-related questions, now don't be asking him his age or whatever. You know, no personal questions, just about the photos. You can email jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. Our theme for next month is St. Patrick's Day celebrations. Send them in to the same email address, jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. Dominic Walsh, where has the time gone? It's great to have you in studio and look forward to talking to you again next month.
I'm delighted to be here and delighted to be with your listeners. Sláinte.
Now, stay with us, because after the break and the news, we'll be talking about Kerry Women in Drama, because it is International Women's Day on Wednesday, and we'll be celebrating our women in drama in the county. A select few, because if we tried to do all of them, we wouldn't be able to. But we'll just have a select few that Fiona Brennan, a theatre historian, brought to us over the years.
The Saturday Supplement with Joe McGill on Radio Kerry.
Now we're into the second hour of the Saturday Supplement, and I hope you're enjoying the programme so far. I mentioned that Wednesday is International Women's Day, so on the programme this morning, we're celebrating three renowned women in playwriting and drama circles, and there were also some wonderful writers there as well. They're from Kerry or have Kerry connections, and we're going to be talking about this morning, we're going to be talking about Pauline Maguire, Carsby native Pauline Maguire. We're also going to be talking about Maureen Cregan from Cloughland, and we're going to be talking about Bridget Boland as well. And she has interesting Daniel O'Connell and Derry Nan connections, which we'll discuss as well. Both notable playwrights and writers all in their own right. So we're going to start off with Pauline Maguire. Now, these are excerpts from interviews I did with theatre historian Fiona Brennan, no stranger to this programme, over the last number of years, going back as far as 2016. And during this tribute this morning, we'll hear excerpts of the various plays being read by members of the Dopus Drama Group. So like I said, we're starting with Pauline Maguire from Carsaveen, Abbey playwright, journalist, writer. Many would have known her as the proprietor of the Anchor
bar as well. So have a listen to this with Fiona Brennan, theatre historian.
Tell us a bit about Pauline. Who was she?
Well, Pauline Maguire is a Carsevine woman, born and bred. She was born in 1919 at the Anchor Bar, and I'm sure there are many people in Carsevine and the surrounds will have known her very well from the time herself and her husband Paddy were running the Anchor. She was born in 1919, and she was the daughter of Mikey and Nora O'Shea. Now, I don't know much about her parents, but what I know about Pauline is that she worked in the civil service in Dublin, and it was there she met her husband-to-be, Paddy, who was a Clare man, and he was also working in a different department. He was in the civil service, and they married in Dublin and moved to Carsevine to take over the Anchor Bar, and that's where she lived all her life.
And was there anything in her background in the early days to kind of say that she might go down the theatre route or into the arts and culture?
Absolutely not. The first reference that I found, and it's the family still have her archive material, and I have to thank you and Chris for trusting me with it. The first mention is a letter. It's a rejection letter from the Talbot Press, written the end of the, I think November 1954, and it's written to Maurice Walsh, the North Kerry playwright, the North Kerry author, and it was Maurice was writing on Pauline's behalf to the Talbot Press. He had sent on a novel of hers, Crosswinds, and I've read that, an early draft at least, and it was rejected. So that seems to be, it's very difficult to know. It's possibly she might have been influenced to begin writing when in Dublin, because, I mean, Dublin was a hive of artistic activity. So I would imagine that's possibly where the seeds were sown.
Yeah, and I suppose down in Carsevine as well, there would be that kind of, you know, there was a bit of dramatic arts down there as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's North Kerry is, I suppose, centre to drama and theatre and the arts, and it's known for that since the early 1970s with the beginning of Writers' Week. But the whole of Kerry was one hive of artistic activity from the 1930s on, and particularly within the amateur drama movement, and that was the same for all across Ireland. It was very important, and I think we'll be talking about that later. Yeah. But as I say, Pauline, she began writing. The novel was rejected, but she was the first of three Abbey playwrights from the Carsevine area. She was very influenced, obviously, by Sigerson Clifford, who already in the 1940s, 1945, had Nano staged at the Abbey, and he was very supportive of the amateur movement again. So you had Pauline in the 1950s writing into the 1960s, and you also had a man by the name of Michael Dunfan Schofield, who had play staged at the Abbey in 1963, and what's very interesting, all three of them also supported the Kerry Drama Festival and had some of their work staged there.
That's amazing to hear. You know, we did a lovely programme a few months back now, you were responsible for Maureen Cregan, and an amazing story unearthed there and broadcast, and now Pauline Maguire. But how did Pauline come across your radar first off?
Oh, I think I'm very, very happy in dusty libraries, and I love archival research, and I've done a lot of work on George Fitzmaurice, publishing a biography, and it's George I did my PhD on. And I think it was that work that I began with George brought me to looking at theatre in Kerry, and I'd done a lot of work on the amateur movement and the Kerry Drama Festival, and I was looking for the women.
Yeah.
The women playwrights, and there's an incredible number of forgotten playwrights in Kerry, and it was through that work that I first came across Pauline Maguire, and curiosity gets the better of me.
Yeah.
And I have to go delving then.
The play The Last Move was a significant one for Pauline, and it was staged at the Abbey, as Fiona Brennan explains.
She was already writing drama and already submitted to the Abbey by the end of 1954. So that takes us to The Last Move. Tell us about that.
It does indeed, yes. So she resubmitted Time of Day, and she had changed the title to the Last Move. And The Last Move is a comedy that was staged by the Abbey Theatre at the end of October 1955. And at that time, the 1950s, the Abbey Theatre had burnt down. The building itself had burned down in 1951, so they had to move to the Queen's Theatre on Pier Street. And the Queen's Theatre was an absolutely huge auditorium, so the Abbey had no choice but to try and get plays that would fill it. So they weren't looking at kind of quality, in inverted commas, per se. They were looking at mostly kitchen comedies, something that would fill the auditorium. That's not to take away from Pauline's last move, the last move, by the way. The last move, and we're going to hear in a minute, is a kitchen comedy, and she was one of only two female playwrights who had their work staged in the 1950s, which is very, very interesting in itself. And it's very interesting when you look at it. I mean, Pauline made the first page, the front page of the Kerryman newspaper in October 1955, but the headline is Housewife Writes Play. And again, it really tells you a lot about the time. They were very, very interested in the fact that, I suppose, how in the name of God did the housewife get time to write a play, run a bar, run a house, mind her children, mind her husband? Yeah. So that's very, very interesting.
And was it almost more derogatory than that, that how could a housewife...
Possibly, even there were the night after the opening of the play, hundreds of people, this is in the front of the newspaper, hundreds of people gathered on Pier Street and stopped traffic to get a glimpse of the housewife, is how it's put, who wrote this play. So it's very interesting. But the play itself got great reviews. And one of the reviewers in particular in the Irish Press says they were so looking forward to hearing some more from Pauline, because even though the play was classed as a comedy, there were some very, very serious themes. And she was very, very brave in what she was trying to write.
Yeah, and we have a reading from the Kerryman, October 1955. And it's read now by Mary Murphy.
A slim, dainty-looking woman in black stepped onto the Abbey stage of the Abbey Theatre last night and said, very sincerely, thank you. Pauline Maguire, a Kerry housewife, had joined the band of Abbey playwrights amidst applause. And after the excitement had died down, and she had thanked the actors who made the premiere of her rural kitchen comedy so enjoyable, after which we're informed, Mrs. Maguire went quietly to a phone to ring her husband. He is ill in Tralee Hospital, she said. My father is the babysitter for tonight.
Hundreds of people blocked traffic on Pier Street trying to get a look at this housewife. Maguire was overawed. She commented,
I will never forget this night.
Dublin theatre goers may also have cause to remember it as the night when a newcomer with a first play joined the ranks of classic Abbey playwrights.
It's basically her housewife, so yeah, prominently mentioned. I just find it hilarious. But it was a big deal, like.
It was a huge deal, and I think it was a huge deal for Carsevine. There were quite a number of people that travelled up by train to make sure they were going to support Pauline, and there were a number of from the angling fraternity and so on and so forth. So it was fierce. It was fierce, exciting for the town as well as for the Maguire family.
Fiona also, during her research on Pauline Maguire, met a friend of Pauline's to find out a bit more about her.
A great friend of Pauline's was a lady by the name of Kathleen Brown, mm-hmm. the retired librarian, and she was a very, very great friend of hers. And I sat down and spoke with Kathleen a couple of years ago when I started my research on Pauline. And again, just watching somebody talk about a friend that they mightn't have discussed in a long, long time. And Kathleen sat back and she said that even though Pauline was extremely reserved about talking about her work, and she's like a lot of other writers, when it came to talking about her own success, she didn't want to. She was very much throwing herself into what she could do for her community. But Kathleen said she was one of the most gentle, loving people that you could ever meet, and I think that's a fine, fine tribute to any individual.
Yeah, because she was reserved when it came to talk about her own success as well.
She was. And in some ways, I suppose it's a shame because we might have known more about it. But look, that's just the nature of the game, and I think it's a tribute to her as well that she was very reserved and let the writing speak for itself.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point you brought up, because it's on the page. It's always there now to be rediscovered, discovered again. It's like a treasure that can be, you know, dug out. and could be put on display
exactly,
again, which,
exactly.
which is great. So, you know, summing up, I suppose, Pauline's legacy and why it's important to remember people like Pauline.
I think it goes back to kind of, I suppose, personally, it's great that I know her family are extremely proud of her. And I mean, I can't say how thankful I am to Hugh and Chris for allowing me to have a look at the archive and actually put it into the boot of my car and borrow it. You know, I mean, that's absolutely wonderful. And there's so many people, as I say, like that, that I've met throughout my time doing some research on theatre in Kerry. But it goes back to having to preserve not just kind of local Kerry history, but having to preserve this very, very important national, social, theatrical and cultural history. It really is.
Yeah, Pauline Maguire there, and we're going to be celebrating another female playwright after the break.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
We're celebrating our female playwrights here this morning. It's International Women's Day on Wednesday. This time we're going to turn our attention to an interview I did on Maureen Cregan with theatre historian Fiona Brennan. Maureen Cregan was involved in the 1916 Rising, which you'll hear the story about very shortly. But she came to prominence again last year and this because there was a play on in Cloughlin called Hunger Strike, and it was acted in by the Cloughlin people themselves. It was a play that was written 100 years ago, and it involved the Civil War. Now, Maureen as well wrote short stories, an accomplished playwright and writer. So let's hear about her now.
Maureen Cregan was born in Cloughlin in 1891, and she was one of four daughters born to Ellen O'Shea, who was from Cloughlin, and Morgan Cregan, who was a stonemason from Newcastle West. And they were an extremely pro-nationalist family and were very, very involved in the whole nationalist organisations. And Maureen, from a very early age, was very interested in learning the Irish language. And she was in school in Cloughlin, national school in Cloughlin, went to boarding school, secondary school in Carrickmacross. And from there, she taught for a while. And eventually, in 1914, she moved to Dublin to study music, where she really got involved in the nationalist movement. And it's there she met the Ryan family, the Ryan sisters, and James Ryan, who she eventually married in 1919. But she was a very, very strong member of Cumann na mBan, and people might be familiar with her story that she smuggled ammunition and notes in a violin case on Holy Thursday, all the way from Dublin down by train to Tralee to pass on to Austin Stack, which she did, and then travelled back to home on Good Friday, back to Cloughlin, where she learned of the drownings at Ballycasam Pier of three of the volunteers. So she speaks about all that in the Bureau of Military Archives statement.
Yeah, it's amazing. You're talking about such significant events in Kerry's history there, and Maureen is associated with a lot of those. I'm very excited about this programme this morning, and I'm very excited to see the play, because I remember you talking about her so passionately before. So tell us about the play then.
Well, the play is called Hunger Strike, and it's based on, written before 1929, and it's based on the real life experiences of Maureen and her husband Jim. Couple were took the anti-treaty stance after the treaty was signed in 1921, and Maureen remained a very active member of Cumann na mBan. They married in 1919. They moved to County Wexford, and I'm afraid James spent a considerable amount of time interned, eventually by the Free State government. And it was, there were thousands of men that went on hunger strike during the Civil War in 1923. It was basically a weapon of war. And James was one of them. And he had been moved around to different internment camps. And he went on hunger strike at Tintown Camp in the Curragh in County Kildare. And he remained on it for just almost 40 days. So it was particularly serious. And what Maureen does, there's a considerable number of letters that still survive Craven, thanks to the Ryan family, are now in the National Library of Ireland in the Maureen Cregan collection. And they tell of his experiences from 1920 right up. And so it is those letters that Maureen uses to write this this play. And if you look at the letters and you look at a lot of the themes and the language that she uses, they're almost word for word from the letters, Jim's letters.
Yeah, and we were very lucky. We also got to interview Maureen Cregan's grandson, Jim Ryan. How much does this mean to you now as a family member, you know, this play being put on in Maureen's native town?
Well, I think she would be delighted. I think she was very fond of Killoglan and often spoke about it. And the fact that, that this play has never been actually shown on screen. It was read on the radio back in 1936, but it's never been actually performed. So she would be absolutely delighted that the first time it was performed was in her hometown. So that would mean a lot to her.
Mm. How proud of ye are ye of her and your grandfather as well? Like, was she spoken about a lot in your family down through the years?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. She was, as you've already said very well, like she was an author. She wrote several children's books, and she was always kind of working on articles and things, and she was interested in everything, and had a wide circle of very different friends. And so she was a great person to talk to, because she'd find an angle on everything that came up, you know. So and then my grandfather Jim was quite different. Like, he was big into the farming and so on, even though he was also a government minister for a lot of the time when I knew him. So they were a very diverse couple, very interesting, a very close couple. But the Kerry connection was very strong with her. And to answer your question, we're extremely proud of them. They both contributed. Now, we're not talking about major contributors, but certainly Maureen was a significant and consistent contributor to the Republican cause right throughout the period of up until 1922. So we're very proud of her. That's just the short answer.
Yeah. What was she like personality-wise? Like, because, you know, just listening to Fiona describe her there when she was on before, she's obviously a formidable lady. But what was her personality like?
Yeah, she was formidable. She was tiny, mind you. She had a lot of trouble with arthritis. So she was very, very small. But as you say, like, she was not a small in personality, and very, you know, when I was a kid, now she would always insist that we spoke Irish to her, for instance, and that was kind of consistent with what you've already said before, always kind of looking at books and recommending books and articles and so on, and be very keen on, and it wasn't just Irish culture. Like, she was very keen on Italian and French and German, all sorts of different friends that she had. So, quite a formidable lady, really, you know.
Now, Maureen Cregan was a very significant writer at that time, as Fiona explains here.
Cregan is only one of three playwrights in Kerry that were writing, and were very, very well known for their writing. So before Cregan, you had Lady Gordon from Arden Sheen and Carrie Lake, and she wrote a play called Troubled Times. Still haven't found the script, but she submitted it to the Abbey Theatre in 1924, so I can only assume that this pro-nationalist supporter was writing about the War of Independence or Civil War. And then you have Cregan's play that comes after. It's published in 1933. And a couple of decades later, you have Carsevine's Pauline Maguire, who has work staged in the Abbey. And she was writing about very, very controversial themes long before some of the well-known male writers were. But as I say, she's a completely neglected figure. And when the play was actually published in 1933, there were very, very positive reviews in national broadsheets. So you had the Irish press saying that there was new ground broken, and that Cregan had talent in creating living characters and touching emotional chords. You had the Kerryman saying that she had, with this play, she'd embraced all the patriot suffering of Irish womanhood, and is a loving tribute to the share born in the national struggle by the women of Ireland. I mean, very, very important quotations. Mm. And... Yeah. they really expected that this was going to be absolutely huge on stage and that we were going to see it on stage very, very quickly. But alas, we didn't.
Well, we didn't. And why didn't we? It was rejected by the Abbey. Why was that?
Oh, it was rejected by the Abbey. She submitted it to the Abbey before it was published. She submitted it to them in 1931 and it was rejected. And I think her publisher for Gill and Son summed it up very, very well, Mr. Cuahan, and he said, it's too controversial. Controversial, they just wouldn't touch it with a barge pole. I mean, you're talking about less than a decade after the Civil War has ended. The wounds of the Civil War were just, I really don't think we can get a real sense of what it must have been like. I mean, there were so many families involved. Families were split. And I mean, there's a whole generation, I suppose, of history gone. You know, when we were looking at, if we were looking for actual information from those that lived through it, you know, people just wouldn't talk about it. And here we have a formidable Republican supporter and her husband, and she's writing this play, and it's very, very true to life. She's, you know, it's not made up, and she's writing it, you know, kind of 8 or 9 years after the Civil War has ended. Whoa, I mean, I suppose today, I don't know, that we might have people with placards outside theatres, you know.
Yeah, but Fiona, you've just summed it up so well then. It's kind of hit me, like, yeah, when you say it that way, like, even now that, you know, they're saying, are we finding a place to talk about the Civil War? But like you say, it was so raw, like, to actually
Absolutely.
Produce something like that.
Yeah, and you know, that's, I suppose, that's one of the, you know, we've had a lot of conversations around this, you know, kind of, we started the whole process of rehearsing for the play, you know. And because this is quite raw, you know, and there have been so many conversations nationally as how do we commemorate this time when brother fought against brother, and it was just such a bloody dark time in our history. How do we commemorate it? How do we, you know, how do we remember this has happened, and what do we learn from it? And I think that's why putting plays on like this, because they're very few and far between kind of during the 1920s. Yes, we have Brian McMahon writing in the 1940s about the Civil War and the Bugle and the Blood, and we have A.P. Fanning, a County Offaly teacher who was in Tralee, writing about the Civil War in the 1930s. But here we have a female writer whose family was split, and she's brave enough to write about this. I'm absolutely delighted that it has taken almost a century to put it on. But the fact that it's a collaboration of Killorglin amateur drama enthusiasts have come together and want to put this on, I think it's absolutely amazing what they're doing. And, you know, we've come full circle, really. You had, I mean, amateur drama, it's not really written about, but amateur drama was so incredibly important in bringing communities together just months after the Civil War. And you had communities in Kerry, and they were staging plays that would help them kind of escape the whole horrible recent past. And they started putting on sensationalist plays, mad plays by the likes of Dion Boucicault's plays. So for example, you had Killorglin, the Temperance Society in Killorglin, putting on a play called Aran Ó Póg in the late 1920s. It took some months, but they were just really trying to get communities together. And amateur drama was a means of social revitalisation in Ireland. And it played as an important part as the GAA did. And not just in terms of speaking about how it might have brought communities together after the Civil War, but for the next number of decades. The whole tradition of amateur drama was just so important in this country.
Yeah, there you have it, Maureen Cregan there, rounding off the three female playwrights we were profiling here this morning. It's International Women's Day on Wednesday, and we said we'd celebrate our female playwrights here on the programme this morning. And again, I have to commend Fiona Brennan, the wonderful work she does on these playwrights and about the drama movement in Kerry, and you know, the amount of investigative work she does on that, and the brilliant work she does preserving all that information as well. It's so vital. So well done, Fiona, on that. Now we'll take a break and we'll have more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
Oh, where's the time gone? We've come to the end of the programme. I hope you enjoyed our programme this morning. A reminder, Dominic Walsh is photography slot if you want to get the photos in for that. The theme is St. Patrick's celebrations, St. Patrick's Day celebrations, and you can email them to jmcgill@radiokerry.ie Wednesday, the Wednesday before the first Saturday of the month by 12 o'clock, and no more than 3 photos, and you can email them to me at jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. Now, a lot of you would have heard about the various fundraising efforts that are going on for Adele O'Sullivan from Valentia Island, who April of 2022 was diagnosed with a brain tumour known as chordoma, and her road to recovery has begun, and there's a lot of fundraising needed in order to aid in that recovery. And there is a dance on Patrick's Day night, 17th of March, at Valentia Community Centre in aid of Adele's road to recovery. Music by Eddie Lee and the Coffees, and doors open at 8:30 p.m. Dancing from 9 p.m. Light refreshments available on the night. So that is in aid of Adele's road to recovery. It's St. Patrick's Day night at the Valentia Community Centre. So again, doors open at 8:30 and dancing from 9 p.m. So go along and support that if you can. Adele grew up on Valentia Island and now resides in London with her partner Shane and daughter Saoirse, and she played with Valentia and Southern Gaels in her youth, and in London with Kingdom Kerry Gaels as well. So we wish her and her family all the best, and all the best with that fundraising. Now, that's all we have time for this morning. My thanks to everyone who tuned in, and also to everyone who contributed to this morning's programme. Abigail Bernard was on sound. Francis is on the way, so keep it here on Radio Kerry. And I hope you have a wonderful weekend. What great weather we have. No better time to enjoy this county of ours. I'll talk to you next Saturday at 9 a.m. Until then, look after yourself and take care.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.